Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning into this week's podcast. While this podcast is free for all of you, it actually costs our little nonprofit some significant resources to purchase rights for all this fabulous music. Please consider making a small gift to From the Top and keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org and click on Support.
Years ago, our show featured a young French horn player who had lost his brother to gang violence. Now, in his 20s, we'll hear how he's returned home and started a free music school that serves over 100 young people. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. Today is our annual Where Are They Now show, and we'll be catching up with our alumni to hear the extraordinary music they're making in their early careers. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. And here beside me, in our glamorous Boston studio, is our host, concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Today we're going to meet five prodigious alumni, starting off with the young woman who's carved out quite an impressive career as a solo pianist. Gabriela Martinez appeared on our program during our very first season. She went on to win the Rubinstein competition in Germany, and today she's on the road giving solo recitals, concertizing with the likes of the San Francisco Symphony, the Chicago Symphony, and she's a longtime favorite and friend of the young conductor Gustavo Dudamel. We'll talk to her about some of the excitement and craziness of her early career in the moment, but first, here she is performing the first movement of the Sonata No. 31 in A-flat major by her favorite composer, Beethoven.
Thank you.
Gabriela Martinez, now 29 years old, performing the first movement of Beethoven's Sonata No. 31 in A-flat major. We're catching up with her after 13 years. She was 16 when she appeared on our show during our first season in the year 2000. Gabriela, when you were on our show way back then in the Middle Ages, your mom regaled us with stories about your fearlessness as a kid musician, taking on pieces that were way, way, way too hard for you, and then completely mastering them. And apparently that fearlessness has stuck with you in your professional career.
That is true. It turns out that I may be addicted to challenges and really enjoy last-minute challenges in particular. A few summers ago, I received a call asking, Gabby, have you ever played Mozart Concerto No. 12? And I said, oh, no, why? Oh, because would you like to play it at Ravinia next weekend? And I thought, sure, of course. I hang up the phone and immediately try to look for the music, quickly learn that I actually don't own the score, try to find it online somewhere, and sure enough, I have never played this piece before. But just to have the opportunity to play at Ravinia with the Chicago Symphony and Perlman conducting was so exciting to me that I said, you know what, okay, I have 8 days, I can do this. But I was actually on vacation when this happened. I didn't have a piano. I didn't even have a computer or anything. I borrowed a computer to download the score to see what it was, and I actually had available to me a 3-octave keyboard that I couldn't actually really play through the whole piece because there weren't enough notes on it. But I, you know, I downloaded it and I read through it and I said, yep, in fact, I have never played this piece, but sure, let's do it. This is great.
So you still love a challenge. You love performing, but there's a new thing in your life that you say you also adore, teaching. How do you have time to teach with all your touring?
You know, sometimes I don't, I'm not sure how I do it, but I think the only way is organization. I actually have a studio of 23 young children in New York that I teach every week. And in fact, when I'm on the road, I teach them over Skype because they love lessons and want to continue regardless of where I am. And it's interesting for them also. I tell them which part of the country I'm going to, and they like to do a little bit of research and find out what happens in that city, and then they tell me about it. It's very sweet. But I love teaching because it's so important to be able to share music with everyone. And I often have crossed paths with so many people that say, oh, yes, I took piano lessons when I was young, but, you know, I quit. It was just so boring. And every time I hear that, it makes me so sad because music is so wonderful that everyone should be able to experience it from a very early age. So I have 23 little students in New York that I see every week and absolutely love it.
And what sorts of performances do you have coming up?
Right now, I have been on a California tour. I was performing with the Fresno Philharmonic, the Rachmaninoff Second Concerto, then played a chamber music concert in LA and playing at the Mondavi Center. And I'm actually very excited because this next season I decided to program the Beethoven Sonata that we just heard, Opus 110, and I'm really looking forward to incorporating that.
Well, so great to hear you and so great to speak with you and so nice that you're doing so well. Gabby, we wish you all the best and we're so proud of you and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Gabriela Martinez, 29-year-old concertizing pianist based in New York City.
Gabby was just as gutsy, just as effervescent when she appeared in our program back in 2000. You can hear what a precocious musician she was as a teenager by going to our show archive at fromthetop.org. We have the original performances of all of our alums on today's program. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Where are they now? That's the question we're answering on today's show. What are the kids who were on our show up to today? For our next alumnus, the answer has been composing major works for orchestra, among other things. I caught up with Pong Pong Gong in his New York apartment. Pong Pong, I've known you since you were 12 years old, and it's been amazing watching and hearing about your musical growth over the years now. How old are you?
I'm 20. I'm turning 21 in 3 months. So,
20 years old and already a veteran concert pianist, performing with the finest orchestras, touring internationally, doing multiple television appearances. But today, for the first time on From the Top, we finally get to enjoy your work as a composer. You've already written a couple of symphonies, concertos, several pieces of chamber music, but what we're about to hear is music you've written for a ballet. What's it called?
It's a ballet based on the tragic Chinese fairy tale known as The Death of the Honeybees. And it's about a overworked schoolboy whose father is a specialist in insects and especially honeybees. So he pities one of the captured ones and he sets the bee free. The bee thanks him and in return turn him to a bee himself and invites him to a tour of her world. Unfortunately, they were spotted by their rival species who envied their freedom and eventually conducted a massacre and a revenge, and the boy eventually was the only person who lived at the end. So,
and we're going to hear scene one called City Scenes, I guess, which then transitions into scene two, which you've called The Dance of the Boy. So what's exactly happening story-wise in these specific movements?
Well, scene one, it shows the stage in a modernized city where everybody is rushing everywhere and doing everything, and which is connected directly to the second dance, which is called Dance of the Boy, which is the time where the boy comes out with, you know, he just got out of school and he's frustrated and he lets out this very ecstatic dance to release his emotions.
And this is the Juilliard Orchestra we're hearing under the direction of Jeffrey Milarski.
Thank you.
We've been listening to the Juilliard Orchestra under the direction of Jeffrey Malarski performing scenes 1 and 2 from Pong Pong Gong's suite from the two-act ballet titled Death of the Honeybees. Pong Pong, this is a major work, and you were writing huge pieces as a teenager, but also concertizing as a pianist. At the age of 13, you were chosen to play the finale for Juilliard's 100th anniversary concert. That's a pretty enormous honor.
It was really walking in a dream, and was a moment that I think anybody would give up anything for.
This was a huge deal. I mean, broadcast live on PBS. I think you were conducting. What did you play, and who conducted?
We played the first movement of the second concerto by Rachmaninoff.
And I think Juilliard's probably most famous alum was there as well, wasn't he? Itzhak Perlman was there. I mean, it's just a monumental event, Pong Pong,
yes,
that you were part of. But interestingly, you've said that you haven't been as happy performing as when you were that age, like 11 or 13 years old. Why so?
Well, it's just because, for me at least, it was the age that was the most innocent, that you were on stage without any concern of any negative outcomes, because you are just so involved with the music and so involved, and there's a bit of show-off.
What sorts of things do you think change?
Well, the biggest difference is the level of responsibility, because you know, as my composition professor always say to people, you were once a child prodigy, but now you are neither a child nor a prodigy. So, you know, and people are no longer there because because you're 12 years old. And they are there because they want to hear good music brought back to life. And I think it's okay for us to feel uncomfortable as long as what being presented to be shared with an audience is still there. And eventually we will be able to unify that, mm-hmm, with both, mm-hmm, personal enjoyment and the public common good.
But Pong Pong, I know that some of this was causing you real problems, real rough times professionally. I mean, you almost quit in the middle of a national tour. What was happening, and when was this? This was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
It was about 3-4 years ago, and the quitting was just a metaphor, and because it was the time where I was having the most problems socially. And when you're at an extremely negative emotional stage, you know, a piano, that big triangular black box, is not enough. It's not enough to release yourself. And for a time being, you know, preparation for concerts became such a huge burden that takes away my time.
Tell me a little bit about how you worked through this extraordinarily difficult time. I know there was one woman who was especially important to you.
Yes, I was with Veda Kuplinski since I was 10, and who was, you know, who ever since then was the chairperson of the piano department at Juilliard. And I think she is living proof that the greatest virtue is still alive. Mm-hmm. She not only did not step off from my guidance, but she went further because she cared about me like her own child, and mm-hmm. she actually paid for my entire first season of my therapy sessions, which was, you know, which because the only thing she wanted was to make me calm down and really look at myself before I make any rational decisions, and she turned out to be so right that I completely destroyed the ridiculous idea of quitting.
Well, Veda has been not only a great source of solace and encouragement, and not only that, but training to you, but to countless others. I mean, we're such a fan of Veda on this program. Pong Pong, through it all, you've emerged as a wonderful composer, and the world is taking notice. Talk about what's happening for you this May.
Well, I am flying to Shanghai in less than a month, and because the Shanghai Philharmonic, they have decided to dedicate an entire program to my symphonic music, which is a treasure that I probably will rarely ever get again.
Well, very, very exciting and life-affirming and work-affirming event, and here you are living the life. It's only going to get better and better. Pong Pong, we're so proud to know you and to be able to be in touch with you again.
Thank you.
And we wish you all the best.
One of our Jack Kent Cook young artists, that was Pong Pong Gong, now 20 years old, composer and pianist based now in New York City. While a lot of our young performers go on to join orchestras or become teachers or strike out on their own like Pong Pong, it's not all that common for our alums to make a chamber music group the central focus of their career. Our next guest has done just that. Mason Fish, who first appeared on our program about 8.5 years ago, was the driving force behind the creation of the Mobius Trio, a guitar trio based in the San Francisco area. In addition to Mason, the trio includes guitarists Matthew Holmes Linder and Robert Nance. They've recently come out with a new CD of all new music, and we're going to hear a live performance of the title track on the CD. It's called Last Light, and the composer is Dan Becker.
Thank you.
We've been listening to the composition Last Light by Dan Becker and performed by the Mobius Trio, featuring guitarists Matthew Holmes Linder, Robert Nance, and our guest here in the studio, From the Top alum, the now 25-year-old Mason Fish. Mason, this is wonderful stuff. It's a very stirring piece. What sorts of things did the composer Dan Becker share with you about its inspiration?
Last Light is... It has sort of a sad inspiration, actually. The piece is based off of his father. The composer Dan Becker, his father passed away as he wrote the piece. That's kind of what inspired specifically the title, but also a lot of the musical content, is that as he watched his father pass away, there was just sort of this light that filled the room, actually. It was like he could actually feel his father passing. And it was just a very sort of surreal experience for him. And since he was writing this piece at the time, it makes sense that there's just sort of no way he could avoid, you know, channeling that sort of those feelings into the music itself.
It has a sense of luminosity and spirituality that suffuses the playing and the ideation musically. It's really quite an affecting piece. Really enjoyed listening to that. So, Mason, after you were on our show, that was like 8.5 years ago, as it is.
Yeah.
You went on to study at the Eastman School in Rochester, and you got your master's at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, which is where you founded the Mobius Trio. But I've got to say, you don't see guitar trios that often.
Oh.
We hear about guitar quartets, and of course, the Assad brothers are a great duo. What made you want to put together three guitars rather than, say, the more common quartet?
That's a really good question, and it's true. The guitar trio, I mean, classical guitar trio, is a much rarer instrumentation compared to the quartet and the duo. I guess my reasoning behind it was, after playing in quartets, it just seemed like a lot of the compositions for guitar quartet are not really, they don't really exploit all the capabilities of the classical guitar. So you end up playing just a single line melody altogether. And, you know, that's a fantastic texture of, you know, four guitars, four melodies. But, you know, if you have one guitar playing a sort of arpeggio pattern, another guitar doing some more percussion, and then two other guitars doing, maybe they're each playing two melodies, then suddenly you've got four guitars doing all, you know, a very, very dense texture. And there isn't as much music written that way.
So given your interest in really creating a new type of guitar ensemble, it makes sense that your new CD, Last Light, is all new commissions. Now, the producer is a rather well-known figure, a teacher of yours. Tell everyone who that is.
Oh, yeah, our producer was Sergio Assad.
Sergio Assad, along with his brother, Oder Assad, pretty much gods of the guitar world. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, they're a huge motivation for us as an ensemble.
Not too shabby to have Sergio produce your first CD. I heard you had a pretty fun way of honoring each new piece you recorded, having to do with a beverage, I believe?
That's right. Yeah, it's pretty recently we've decided to, with each new commission, at the premiere, we are brewing a beer, which is going to be sort of themed with the composition as best we can.
I'm a total beer snob myself, so that really struck a chord there.
Yeah.
Mason, so when we asked you to look back and think about the difference between you as a guitarist now versus you as a guitarist when you were on our show in high school, you said now you just ask more questions. How so?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. A lot of that comes from studying with Sergio Assad in the first place as I got my master's at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, is that... That was one of the ways that he really helped me refine my playing, is not telling me exactly how to play a passage, but sort of, well, asking me to ask myself questions about the music. So, like, if I play any given phrase of a solo piece, ensemble piece, you name it, it doesn't really matter. I just need to ask myself, what is this passage doing? Or what do I want it to do? Or what can it do? Or just all of these questions, just questioning the music. And in a lot of cases, there's multiple answers or no answer at all, but the act of trying to answer those questions is I think a big difference from my playing now and my playing back then.
It's a beautiful concept, and of course a good way of having you, you know, be able to work on your own, you know, spread your wings. Of course, you know, my way of working will forever be altered now. I'll look at every passage that I play and wonder whether it should be an oak cask IPA or a Pilsner. So I thank you for that new context there, Mason. And it's been great reconnecting with you. And my gosh, again, such phenomenal work on the CD. I hope it does real well. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks a lot, Chris.
Mason Fish, now 25 years old and a proud member of the Mobius Trio. Their new CD is called Last Light.
Being in the audience for a From the Top taping is an unforgettable experience. We tape shows all over the country, and this June we'll be coming to the Lone Star State to tape shows in El Paso and San Marcos. For tickets and information, go to fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a worth all their own in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture, poetryfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're hearing the music and stories of some of our most illustrious alumni as part of our annual Where Are They Now show. Coming up, a violinist we've never forgotten from one of our earliest programs performs some unaccompanied Bach that's featured on her new CD. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Eliodoro Vallecillo, as a teenager, was a terrific French horn player, but what made him extra special in our hearts was the journey he had made to become a musician. His brother had been a musician, and Eliodoro had started music to follow in his brother's footsteps. Tragically, that same brother was killed as a result of gang violence. Eliodoro defied all the odds to stick with music and become one of the top players in the San Francisco Youth Symphony. We'll hear about the incredible new career directions Eliodoro has taken now that he's in his 20s, but first, give a listen to the French horn performance he delivered when he was on our show as a teenager. This is Eliodoro Vallecillo at the age of 16 performing Morceau de Concert by Camille Saint-Saëns. Thank you. Eliodoro, great to have you back on the show. And we've just heard your fabulous French horn performance. You were certainly one of the strongest teenage horn players in the country when you were in high school. But though it'll probably shock our audience, these days your focus isn't on French horn at all. Tell everyone about your new instrument and about the music you're performing now.
My new interest now is a completely different beast. It's the accordion. And in a group called Proyecto X, and it's called Música Norteña. The genre is called Música Norteña, and it comes from northern Mexico, and that's the style that we play: accordion, drums, drum set, bass, or sousaphone, and bajo sexto, which is it's a 12-string guitar that's only used in this genre.
Después de tantas noches de amargo sufrimiento.
And Proyecto X has got quite the successful tour going and a CD, and I actually had a great time watching you all on YouTube. What is the CD called?
It's called Con Power.
And you were pretty much self-taught.
Yeah, pretty much, because I met people that were into that music, and so they would take me to different places where they had, you know, live bands playing and stuff. So I ended up hooking up with some people there, and then eventually they started calling me to go play with them.
Wow. So you went to college for French horn and had been working so hard at it for so long, I remember. What was it like to make the decision to move away from the French horn and all that history and everything?
That was like, I would say that's one of the hardest choices I've had to make my entire life, because, like you said, I had so much time invested in the horn, and not to mention money, because it's a pretty expensive instrument, pretty expensive. The lessons are pretty expensive, gas, all that stuff added up, and not to mention also my teachers this time. That they had invested in me, so it was pretty hard for me to try and choose something else, because I didn't want to let any of them down.
You had actually, I think, also something that may have contributed to your thought process at this time. I guess you had an injury, and so your jaw was giving you some problems as well.
Yeah, at that point it was getting kind of hard to keep going with it, because physically it was kind of, It was getting a little harder and harder as I went on.
Well, I can't imagine any of your teachers or any of your family would have any sense of being let down by the way you live through your music these days, Eliodoro. It's a wonderful band. Eliodoro, when you came on the show originally, we talked about your hometown of Salinas, California, and what a tough place it was to grow up in. You lost your brother to gang violence there, but now you've moved back to Salinas, and for the best reason. Talk about what you've got going there.
Like you mentioned, unfortunately, Salinas is in the limelight for the wrong reasons. There's a lot of violence there, a lot of gang activity. My brother was, you know, the outcome of that. And so now we're running a nonprofit music school called Escuela de Música Regional Mexicana, and it's we teach música norteña to the children and stuff. So it's been pretty successful. Now we have two sites now going, and the good part about this program is that, for one, they get free instruments. We loan them free instruments, and then they get free lessons. And so everything is free for the most part.
What do you think motivated you to move back home to do this sort of work?
One of the strongest reasons why I moved back is because I have a theory that the reason why a lot of these kids fall into the wrong path is because they're lacking choices, and they don't feel like they have any purpose. And so what I've created with music is, I know most, a lot of them probably won't be, you know, professional musicians, but they have choices now. They can find their own purpose.
I want all of our listeners to know that you can learn more about Eliodoro's program by going to fromthetop.org. Eliodoro, we are so proud of you, and it's so great to see you having a great time playing music, and we applaud the great work that you're doing in your community. It's wonderful to see and wonderful to hear. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Eliodoro Viocio, now 22 years old and making a difference in Salinas, California.
Eliodoro is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to our website to learn more about our scholarships and to download a podcast of our show. From the Top podcasts are available each week at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Our final performer on today's Where Are They Now show is the violinist Bella Ristova. She came on the first show we taped just a week or two after the 9/11 tragedy in 2001, but her appearance was nothing short of pure joy. Today, she's spreading that joy around with her busy concert schedule and the release of a new CD. It's called Bella Unaccompanied, and it features all unaccompanied pieces for the violin. Bella, I remember that when you came on the show as a teenager, you were already living on your own, having moved to the U.S. from Bulgaria. And as a pro, you've become a big champion of unaccompanied violin music. What is it about unaccompanied violin that appeals to you in particular?
Well, my favorite instrument is the piano. It's always been. I wanted to play the piano when I was a little girl, but my mom said, no, you have to play the violin. And I think because of that, I'm drawn to unaccompanied violin music because I feel that the piano is a complete instrument in itself. You know, there's all the Beethoven piano sonatas, which are some of my favorite pieces ever written. And I love being able to make the violin sound like a complete instrument too. You know, people often think of the violin as, you know, a beautiful soaring melody above, you know, an accompaniment of some sort. And I think there are many solo unaccompanied violin pieces that you know, they have the accompaniment and the melody and a little bit of filler in between too, which make it very difficult, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, from your new CD, we're actually going to hear you play the Gigue movement from the Partita No. 2 in D minor of Johann Sebastian Bach. What do you love in particular about this partita?
I feel that all of Bach's music, but especially the D minor partita, represents all the human emotions. There's happiness, there's joy, there's sadness, there's, you know, mourning. There's just everything. And I really enjoy bringing all the different characters to life and for the audience to hear.
Well, you've made a particularly beautiful performance of this piece. And my God, at such a young age to be playing Bach so masterfully is wonderful. But clearly you do it with great, great love. Bella, thank you so much for coming back and visiting and talking with me. And I'll see you out there on the road.
Great. Looking forward to it.
That was From the Top alumna Bella Ristova waxing eloquently about the joys of Bach. And I've got new news about Bella. She just was awarded an Avery Fisher Career Grant, so congratulations there, Bella. Before we enjoy all the character of Bella's performance, it's time for Joanne and me to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to our special Where Are They Now show. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week when we will take it from the top. And now, from her CD, Bella Unaccompanied, this is From the Top alum Bella Ristova, performing the Gigue from Bach's Partita No. 2 in D minor. Thank you.
This special Where Are They Now episode of From the Top is written and produced by Tim Banker. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. From the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.
Thanks for downloading this week's From the Top podcast. If you liked what you heard, head over to our website, fromthetop.org, where you can listen to every show in its entirety. I'm Christopher O'Reilly. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.